welcome everybody to the When Hard Work Beats Talent podcast. Now, before we begin, I must say Wes and I may be the two worst podcast hosts in the history of the world because we wait maybe a month, 2 months, 4 months to have a podcast. It's just whenever we feel like it, we're busy, guys. We got family life, we got insurance business, we're busy. But luckily, today, we have the pleasure and honor of having none other than the voice of the Cowboys, Larry Reese. Larry, thank you for joining us.
Excited to be here with you guys. So work hard beats talent. Is that what this is?
When hard work beats talent.
Hard work. When hard
work. So
we used to have a motto on our softball team that it's better to look good than to be good. This will be fun. Pleasure to be with you guys, especially after a big win.
Yes, it was a big win. First game of the season, OSU came out on top, and that's always what you want for.
Absolutely.
And so with every podcast, we start with rapid-fire questions. So first question is this. What is one hidden talent you have?
You know what? I don't know if I have a hidden talent. You know, I'll say that I try to impersonate Sam Elliott because my beautiful wife, Jimmy, loves her some Sam Elliott. I keep reminding her he's like 78 years old. I'm not sure if we end up at the same place, she wouldn't leave with Sam Elliott. So I try to do his wash for dinner. I try to get that going so she'll at least be excited that I'm in the room. So I don't know if I didn't tell you guys that might be one. My wife at least appreciates the effort.
At least there's that, the effort.
Well, next question is, we've asked it to everybody who's been on, and we've had the same place mentioned twice, which is shocking with all the places in the world that you can say this. But so our next question is, where is one place that you've been that you never want to go again?
Well, Norman, Oklahoma. I mean, that's 95% of our donors and our supporters, you know, they just don't like how they're treated down there. You know, I'm giving them a little grief. It is bedlam, so, you know, we feel mutually about each other on both sides. They try to say, well, we root for OSU, but they don't root for us. I mean, there might be a handful of them that do. And usually the ones that maybe do root for us are actually the ones that went to school there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can handle the ones that went to school there. It's the ones that, you know, never been on campus except for a football game that drive me crazy. And I know a lot of those folks. You know, I grew up in Miami, Oklahoma. I was three blocks from Steve Owens Boulevard. By the way, I love Steve and Tinker Owens. They're great people. I'm very proud that they're Miami War Dogs. But, you know, I grew up kind of thinking I was an OU fan. I went down there for a weekend. I had really close friends at both schools in Norman and in Stillwater. I went down to Norman, and it just wasn't my cup of tea. They weren't my kind of people. A week or two afterwards, I came to Stillwater, and it was home. People were so friendly, and it just felt right to me. So then about 10 minutes later, I realized I didn't like that side of Bedlam. I didn't like Crimson. And so I've had orange in my blood ever since. And I always say that the folks down there have earned how we feel about them. So that would probably be one spot. It's not possible, but I have literally... My family, we've tried to hold our breath driving through Norman. It's hard to do. That's a long drive there. So that's probably the spot.
That's quite the feat if you can hold your breath going through Norman.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. What is your guilty pleasure?
Well, my wife would probably tell you it's ice cream. But I would tell you that my guilty pleasure is I've had a crush on this young lady since we were in grade school. I jokingly say that her brother was my best friend only so I could get to her. It took me about 34 years to break her down and get her to finally go out with me. But my wife is my dream girl. So to have your dream girl, I don't know if I feel guilty about it. I feel dang good about it. But she's probably my guilty pleasure that I get to wake up with her every morning and I have her in my life.
That's probably the best answer anybody's ever given in our...
I'm hoping my wife hears that at some point.
Let's go ahead and listen to the podcast, if you will.
Listen, if we all got lucky and married women who put up with us, and that's the... Just try to make sure they stay around every day should be our only goal.
Absolutely.
What's the most surprising person who's had a major impact or an impact in your life? or on your life?
You know, I've had so many great mentors and great people in my life. My father, that's not surprising. I think most of us, if we have good parents, we feel that way about our parents. I couldn't have had better parents. They were always present, which is the best gift you can give your kids. I know you guys understand that. Be there. Even when you're busy, you gotta be at that dance recital. You got to be at that Little League game, whatever. That's the best gift you can give. That, you know, Steve Buzzard was a great mentor to me, and probably
Buzz was the man.
Ryan, spend a little time with him too, I'm sure, in our media relations office. You know, he's the guy that hired me when I was a student to do the public address and be the stadium and arena voice of the Cowboys and Cowgirls. He hired me to do Cowgirl basketball. I didn't even know my instructor knew my name. I'd only been here a short time. And he gave him my name because Steve called over just saying, you got anybody that might want to do public address for women's basketball? And back then, we might have had 300 people here at a game. So I came over and met Steve, and he didn't even try me out. He knew I'd done it in my hometown of Miami. I'd had some experience, and he liked my voice, I guess. But we hit it off because he's from Quapaw, Oklahoma, which is about 10 minutes from Miami, Oklahoma. So we Northeast Oklahoma guys stick together. He gave me the job, and then the next year, Eddie Sutton's second year, Steve wanted me to do men's basketball and football. I became the first student to get to do it. It was kind of a political move because we'd had public address announcers that had done those two sports 25 and 20 years. But wow. Steve stuck his neck out on the line for a young student. And now, last night, I kicked off my 35th year on the public address mic and calling games for Cowboy football. My first year we were 0-10-1, so I'm surprised they kept any of us around. Not to bring up something negative that we all struggled with, but I would say Steve Buzzer, and then I'm also going to throw in Eddie Sutton. Eddie Sutton was great to me, one of my favorite people ever on this planet, and you know, he taught me a lot. He also built me up. After that first year, he sent me a note and said that me being on the public address was worth 10 points a game. And so I always wanted to average double digits in college athletics. I never had the talent to do that, so I felt pretty good about that. And one other guy, I know you asked me one, I would say Whispering Richard the Barber here in town. It taught me how to treat people, how to have relationships and be friends with people. It was like walking into Mayberry when you went into the Varsity Barbershop. Did you ever go there, Ryan?
I never did.
Yeah. You don't need haircut.
I may have one time a long time ago, I was growing up.
We helped him close down his shop when his health was taking a little bit of a dive. And he just wanted, even when I was stressed out at times here working in Gallagher Ive Arena, I would just, even if I didn't need a haircut, I'd go down there and it would just diffuse everything. And you'd hear some funny stories. I walked in one time, I've got a picture that I took, and there's actually a lady in the barber's chair because she used to get a haircut from Richard. There were a few ladies that did. And then Bob Fenimore and Eddie Sutton were both in there. So I took a picture of them with Whispering Richard. And I just learned a lot from that guy. So I would say he had a big impact on my life too.
That's pretty amazing. There's three really good human beings right there. And luckily we still have Steve. Buzz hired me too. I remember that. I was just looking for something and thought PR would be the cool thing to do. And he hired me.
You learned from one of the best for sure. And Steve's just a good human being, just an all around good person.
Oh, and how he managed and went through the plane crash was
he had to be, you know, the guy out in front on that. Well, I look back and I know it aged him. Because he was feeling the pain. I mean, he was close to those guys. I tell people I was friends with 7 of the 10. I knew the other, or 2 of the other 3. I didn't know both pilots. I knew one of them, Denver. That was the most difficult time I've ever gone through. And I can't imagine being Steve, having to be out there in front of the media on behalf of Oklahoma State. But the leadership we got from him and Terry Don and from President Halligan was unbelievable. And I'm so proud that they made a promise that we would always remember, and here we are all these years later, and we are still keeping that promise. And I hear from the families all the time. I mean, it's like a family, all of that group, because they've stayed together And I hear from them all the time. And when I hug their necks, they're always so appreciative that we have kept those names alive, so their loved ones alive, and taught the next generations as they come along. So I'm really proud of Oklahoma State.
It was a sad, tragic time in Oklahoma State, but it brought the best out of Oklahoma State.
You know, I think that's when we became the OSU family. I think it, you know, I talked to, you know, the name Dick Sorgel. He was a 3-sport letter winner here. So Dick Sorgel was a starting quarterback. He started for Mr. Iba on the hardwood out of Oklahoma City, Douglas, I believe. And then he was the starting pitcher that won the 1959 College World Series championship. And one of the best storytellers I've ever been around, but he and I would wax poetic whenever we were together and talk about life and OSU. And he was here in the 50s. I got here at the very end of the 80s and have been here ever since. They've not kicked me out of here. And I was just telling, you know, he grew up and he was going to OU all the time. His brother was the JV basketball coach at OU. So he was going to OU all the time, but he really wanted to play for Mr. Ivan. When he got the opportunity, he did. And so he had the same experience. He had a chance to go either place. And I told him my story that I just told you guys about going to Norman and it didn't fit and coming here and it was home. And he said, Larry, it's always been the people. The people here have always been the friendliest people you'll ever know. And it's always been a close-knit group. But I really believe tragedy is what galvanized us as the OSU family. We've had too many of them here. You've had the 2 plane crashes. You've had the homecoming parade tragedy. Just too much of that here. I hope we're done with that for a long, 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 long time. But it did bring us all together and make us a family.
I agree. I mean, it's, you still see 10 stickers on windows and 4 stickers and 11 stickers as well. We got a guy in our office that he knew, was it Nate on the team? Nate Fleming. Knew him, and so he's still got an 11 sticker right there on his vehicle. Nate, anytime he gets a new vehicle, 11 sticker goes on.
Nate had such a good spirit. He was like the number one cheerleader. Worked hard in practice, the number one cheerleader during games. And man, when he'd come off the bench and the place would go crazy, and I'd introduce him coming to the game. I still cherish those memories, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, it was. I sat next to his dad once on a plane coming back to Oklahoma City, flying in, yep. And so, yes, speaking of tragedies and difficult times, what is the hardest thing you've had to overcome?
Well, the hardest period was that 2-week period when we went to San Francisco. The team was drained. You know. Personally, it was... in 2014 with brain cancer, which I thought was the worst thing for me because I use my voice all the time when I'm calling a game or I'm raising money, my full-time job for LSU athletics, and I just thought that's the worst thing. It was always kind of in my mind, well, I hope I never get brain cancer. In the end, it didn't end up being the worst because I had great doctors at MD Anderson. But, you know, going through 2.5 months of treatment, radiation, and chemotherapy was difficult. My wife was there with me, and I had great support. The OSU family wrapped their arms around me. No man here in town even put it out there. People handled it. Once I figured out what it was, I didn't mind everybody. I wanted everybody to pray for me. People on the other side of the bed praying for me. So I don't need to grieve earlier, but I do appreciate the support there. Tweeted back and said, hashtag with a voice, and that became the way people would communicate with me. A social media post and then t-shirts created. I just had great support from everybody in the OSU family and beyond. Like I said, I was just very fortunate, and I had a radiologist down there that the second time I met with him, he said, you're probably worried about your voice. I said, I am. I'm worried about walking my daughter down the aisle, growing old with my beautiful bride, taking care of my parents as they get older. I'm worried about all those things and more. But I could give up announcing, I will. He said, well, he goes, so we're getting pretty good at this radiation stuff. I'm going to protect your voice. And he put a metal piece right here. Every time I had my radio information keep those waves from hitting vocal cords. And he said, you know, he didn't know me from Adam, but he said, hey, I was watching the Megalodon basketball game because I knew you were an athlete. You were wearing an orange blazer. I said, yeah, which I thought was amazing. This guy's so busy. And he goes, well, I thought I spotted you. He goes, well, I'm going to protect your voice as best I can. He goes, you might sound a little more aggressive. You might sound like Jack Buck. And I told him immediately, I said, listen, I'm a Cardinal fan. If I sound like Jack Buck, smoke 2 million cigarettes, I'll take it. You know? So that's exactly what happened. I was very blessed to get through that period and great. You know, the reason I went to MD Anderson, I say this, there's a problem. Don't be like me and ignore it. Let me know this big. You know, you think, ignore it for 4 or 5 months. That could really spread somewhere else. I'm in big trouble. So don't do that. Then if you have cancer, you get one shot. So go to a center of excellence and at least get a second opinion. A lot of times, MD Anderson will say, your doctor's on the right track. Do it. You can do your proton, radiation, whatever you got, you know, up in Oklahoma. But I was thinking about doing that. Because I just wanted to stay close to my doctors in high school. And I had 2 OSU grads. One of them I went to school with, and one of them I didn't know. And one I didn't know had throat cancer. And the other was a female friend of mine that had breast cancer. And they really believed that on MD Anderson wouldn't be around. So I made the call to Boone Pickens and told him what was going on. And he said, Larry, I'd have been mad if he hadn't asked for help. By the way, I gave MD Anderson $40 million. I said, I know, Mr. Pickens, that's why I'm calling. I think you know somebody. And he said, by the end of the day, you'll have a call from MD Anderson and you'll be in good hands. And I told him thank you. I went to Tulsa to meet with a couple of donors, and before I got on the Broken Arrow Expressway, call from MD Anderson, was on the line getting set up. So the difference in doctors is not that we don't have great doctors here, but the doctor I was talking to is a great guy. I wish you could. I asked him how many throat cancer radiations he had done, and he said, I think you'd be the 11th. Well, my doctor at MD Anderson does 11 of them every morning.
Oh.
I liken it to, I want the gym rat of whatever I had, my throat cancer. I want the gym rat that's in there every day focused on that, not doing a breast and doing a prostate and then doing a throat every once in a while. Yeah. That's my advice to people, is at least get that second opinion from a center of excellence like MD Anderson, because you got one shot to knock it down.
You mentioned earlier about OSU athletics. I mean, obviously it's going to be around OSU athletics. I went to Southwestern, so it's not like it's a center of basketball or athletic excellence. Other than, I know we've had some very good characters go through there over the years.
Yeah.
I have a buddy who's an OSU grad, and he took me to the Texas OSU game that Kevin Durant played in, that you were there. And it was obviously a great game. I mean, I grew up in Texas. I just love basketball. And so we show up and we have great seats. And all of a sudden, these highway patrolmen start walking in. And I'm like, I tell my buddy, I'm like, what did you do? Like, why are we in trouble? He's like, what are you talking about? I said, there are Oklahoma Highway Patrol everywhere. And all of a sudden, it's Governor Brad Henry walks in. And he's sitting basically like right next to us. And then I look down and Boone Pickens is right in the middle on the floor. I'm like, so the governor has worse seats than the big governor. It was awesome though. There's nothing like Gallagher, Iowa. That is one of the coolest places on the planet to watch a basketball game.
Well, you know, CBS Sportsline. Yeah, CBS Sportsline named it the rattiest arena in the country. Well, it was during the 87 times.
So nice.
Some of Sean's short tenure here, but we've got to get that. I believe Coach Lutz is going to do that. I think he's building something here this year. Game you mentioned, you know, Sean Sutton's the head coach, Kevin Durant. I mean, that was triple overtime. That's the wildest game I've ever been around. And 3 overtimes. Every time you thought we had won it, Kevin Durant would hit a shot from almost half court, and we'd go to another overtime. And then, as you remember, Mario Bogan hits a dagger 3 to win that game for us. That's also the game that Eaton, ball's going out of bounds, and he flips it over his shoulder, and it banks in. 3 points off what should have been a turnover. So that was a wild. Remember, Sean Sutton almost passed out on the sideline. There was so much going on, but you saw the wildest victory I've ever seen here. And it was just an epic night in the old field.
Gallagher is such a special place. Wes, you did. I wish you could see it when we were in school there. You know, when I was at media relations, every basketball game, there'd be people camping out days before. They'd skip class, go camp out, or go to class. I have no idea.
Bringing pizzas.
Yeah. Awesome. They'd bring pizzas out there. It was awesome. It was loud. We played Cincinnati one year when they turned off the lights that first year. And they literally turned off the lights. Instead of turning them down, they turned them off.
Well, so, numbers. So you're supposed
yeah.
to be a facilities person. My buddy Sean Hydeville was right next to him, and he was in charge of that. And he should have seen the look on his face when he realized that they didn't put the covers down. They had accidentally turned them off because they have to cool down for like, it was 19 minutes.
Yeah.
And you got Huggy Bear there. He's looking at him like, what, you know, what in the world's going on here? I mean, and then Barry Trammell writes, I don't know why some marketing nappy head thought that we needed to turn off the lights in historic Gallagher Arena. So poor Sean was getting lit up in the paper even. But that was a funny night and another good victory for the Cowboys over a very good
wow.
There's no place better. That's my favorite building in the world. And, you know, more championships have been won in this building where I'm seated today than any other facility in the country. When you think about wrestling national championships, all the individual champions, Mr. I had the first national championships in college basketball history right here. So this is a really special building. We've been playing in here since 1938. We're just so fortunate to just know Coach Lutz and Coach Taylor are going to bring back, you know, the craziness that is so often in this building. I can't wait. It's not the same when it's not packed. It's still a great place, don't get me wrong. When I'm walking in here, you know, I tell a story. The first year that Steve Buzzard put me on the mic for the Cowboys, there were lines outside, so it was great, you know. Wearing suspenders back then and trying to look deeper, and I would just walk through all my buddies that had been waiting in line for the last 5-6 hours, and they'd be dog pissing me as I walked in, showed them my media credentials. See you later, boy. I was big time with my friends, but my buddies could be at the front of the line now, and they would sit on the front row like I did the year before, and I had a basketball in my head with the ice cut out, and we were some of the crazies in there, so I got to experience that the year before started calling the games for Coach Sutton. So you're right. This is a special place.
It is such a special place. I love going in there. I honestly think that Gallagher, the way Gallagher is, and then Boone Pickens Stadium, it's the perfect setup because it's that half horseshoe, that little horseshoe with Boone Pickens, and that sound bounces off Gallagher.
Yes.
It's great setup.
Well, and what's great about Gallagher Arena is the slope of the seats. So you're closer than any other. And it's kind of, you got to hang on when you're walking down because it is steep. But because we, Gary Sparks came up with, you know, building around it and cutting the roof off, we were able to continue that slope. You know, you can't with ADA and all those laws, you can't build that way. But if you're going to add on, you can continue it. So Coach Sutton used to joke that Gallagher Eye was so intimidating because the fans are so close that they can reach out and pull the hairs on the opponent's legs. And that's about right. That's how close you are down there.
Yeah. It feels like you're going to fall on the floor when you're in your seat. I mean, you have to, yeah, it's awesome. Cause it's for a basketball junkie like myself who just loves college basketball. It was for me walking in there. I'm assuming I haven't been to Fog Allen yet, and it's on the list to go to. But I feel it's going to be like the same kind of the feeling when I walk in the first time.
Yeah, it is. I've been to Fog Allen a few times, and it's special too. I mean, you feel it when you walk in now. It feels even older because they've still got some of the old wood seating in there, I believe. And when I first went in there, they still had kind of the bathrooms were way out. They still had the troughs like we used to have in Boone Pickens Stadium, which I still have donors tell me, bring back the troughs. It's much easier just get in there and get over with, get out. But we're not bringing back the troughs, I don't believe. But
I
would say I think Gallagher is nicer because of what we've done to renovate it. But there's a lot of history there, and you need to go there and witness a game. I was there the day that Marcus Smart and the boys, you know, Marcus did the backflip. We got the win up there. Travis Ford was coaching. It didn't matter. You know, Coach Sutton should have won a couple of really bad calls at the end of games, but he never won up there. Even our final 4 years, we didn't get a win. Travis snuck one out, and Coach Boynton snuck one. can be done, but it's hard. But it's also been hard, you know, most of the time in the arena.
That's right. Well, my last rapid fire question, even though we kind of gone through this a little longer, is who is one person you'd love to meet and maybe have a meal with that is either dead or alive? You can pick any person in him.
It's hard to just say one. I mean, the smart answer would be saying, man, Abraham Lincoln, just kept this country together. My mom would want me to say Elvis Presley. You know, so I was a big Elvis fan. She had me a polyester outfit with a cape that said Elvis when I was like 5 years old. Halloween costume. So she had to sit me down when I was 7 and tell me that the king had not left the building. Both of us, but you know what? I'm going to surprise you, and I thought about this recently. You know who would be great to go to dinner with? Bob Uecker.
Oh.
I would love to have gone to dinner with him and get him telling stories. That is one of the funniest human beings, one of the most interesting guys. You know, I'm a Cardinal fan, so he was a Cardinal. He was part of the 64 team. He would say he was more the water boy than anything, but he was on the 64 World Series team. And there's a classic couple of moments where in the World Series, to defuse things, he's out there with a tuna shagging fly balls before game 2, I think, of the World Series. And he got his team to come down and end up. I think they beat the Yankees that year. So that's a form of leadership there, you know, just to know when the team's a little tired or whatever. And then the other hilarious story is they're taking a team picture, and I forget what year it is, but he and Bob Gibson, who comes off as a very stern guy, they decide to hold hands during, and they realize this is during the civil rights movement, but they hold hands and nobody catches it. So if you look at the picture, they are grinning from ear to ear, and Uecker has his hand over holding Gibson's hand. It's just such a funny moment. They both got fined because when they found out, they had to call everybody back and redo the picture. So I think they got fined $200 each or something. Just a legendary story. So I just think he's one of the most interesting people to ever walk the planet. And I think, you know, he's a broadcaster as well. So I like that part of it. I think he would have been fun to go to dinner with. Surprise you. That's a crazy answer.
That's a good one.
You quote Major League all the time. And he'll go, Jim, that's the bed outside.
I mean, he made that movie. I mean, that movie would have been okay. That movie is great because of my Uecker. Don't tell him the best color man in the country for nothing, folks. I said last night, we messed up a call. One of my spotters arguing over down the distance or whatever. Christ, nobody's listening anyway. It was late in the game, you know. So I quote him all the time, too.
You're not pouring whiskey into your coffee cup during the game, are you?
Already kind of in a gray area on whether I'm a homer or not. I think everybody knows I kind of am, and I do believe in home field and home court advantage. But you don't need me on call. Something silly like that. I remember the story I heard: West Virginia and Pittsburgh hate each other. Right? Well, they're at a football game in Pittsburgh, and the PA announcer—I don't know who he was. He was making funny announcements like, yeah, we have a John Deere tractor double parked in lot C, West Virginia license plate EIEIO. You know, he's doing silly stuff like that. I think he got fired. So that's probably what would happen to me. I would do something legendary that people would talk about it forever, but you wouldn't hear me on the mic at home games anymore, I'm afraid.
That's wild.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, how did you get in? You said earlier you started calling games at your home high school. How did you get into that to begin with?
You know what? I'm from Miami, Oklahoma, so I was playing every sport. I was quarterback, junior high. I was a wide receiver and backup quarterback in high school. So I got a pretty good athlete. You know? Playing basketball, I could shoot it a little bit. Played baseball, and so I just assumed, well, I'm going to get recruited and get to play some college ball. Well, by my junior year, I'm realizing, boy, there's not a single coach talking to Larry Reese. So what's my plan going to be? And growing up in a small town, you know, I remember I'd be like in line at the grocery store and I'd be talking to my friend and a little old lady would go, boy, you got a great voice. You ought to go into radio. And so I guess I've had that happen several times. And so always had that in the back of my mind. Maybe that would be a plan for me. So whenever I wasn't getting recruited, I wasn't going to get to fulfill my dream of playing college athletics on any level or any sport. Maybe I can do this. So I ended up talking to high school. I actually ended up quitting playing baseball because we had a coach who was a really good coach, but he wasn't a good baseball coach. He was our defensive coordinator in football. Coach Broyles, Chuck Broyles, I believe, he went on to win a couple of national championships at Pitt State as the head coach. So he was a good ball coach, but we weren't taking baseball seriously. So my best friend and I just said, let's not play baseball. So then we hire a guy named Chris Crosby, who's an OSU grad, played baseball here. He ends up taking my senior group, who I believe I would have been playing first base. They won the state championship. So I've always kind of kicked myself for stopping playing after my sophomore year. But he did hire me to, he said, why don't you do our public address? So that was really my first entry into, I shouldn't say my first. When I was in Little League, I was probably 11 or 12, and my dad would do the PA at our Little League games, and I always thought it was cool. I hit one home run in my life off of Dusty Beckemeyer. Take that, Dusty. I hope you see this. I hit it over the fence, and I'm rounding second, and I hear my dad, you know, he said, home run. And then I round second, and he says, that's my boy, you know. So I always kind of stuck with me. So he let me call the game after mine one night. And so that got me the taste of it. So I give him credit for that. But then Chris Crosby hired me. I ended up doing some basketball games. And then there's a lot of benefits to growing up in a small town. Did you both grow up in a small town? Ryan, you grew up here.
You know I did.
Yeah. I mean, call that a small town. Mine much smaller. Wes, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little town in northeast Texas called Leonard. It's about 1,500.
You know what I'm talking about. There's some benefits to being in a small town. So we graduate high school. We're going to NEO. And me and a buddy named Mike Elmore, we decide we ought to go talk to the local radio station, KGLC, KSSM, and tell them that we need to call War Dog basketball games. So we walk in. The general manager lets us come right in his office. And we tell him, he goes, have you guys ever done radio? We're like, nope, but we still think you ought to hire us. And crazy enough, his name was, what is his first name? Simpson. Anyway, he says, well, I'll tell you what, if you guys can sell it, we'll let you do it. And so we go in our little downtown area. We first go to Osborne Drug, which is where my mom worked for 33 years, I think. And my first job was at Osborne Drug as a delivery boy, cleanup guy, all that. We go talk to Willie Osborne, and he immediately buys the we don't Dave Simpson for it. So then we're off and running. We go to the next stop. We got turned to the next stop. They take it. We end up selling it. And so the next thing you know, we're in here making up commercials and learning how to run the equipment. What a great experience. You know, if you live in Dallas, yeah. So I was lucky to grow up in a small town and get an opportunity. And so our coverage of War Dog basketball was more like a variety show because we don't understand it. War Dogs made a shot there. Who was that? Okay, yeah. I mean, we're kind of being play-by-play, but we're more, we think we're, you know, David Letterman and Johnny Carson or something. What great experience we got. So then when I came here, I was able to walk into Rex Holt's office at KSPI and just say, hey, I just wanted you to know I moved into town. Some radio experience. If you ever need a backup, let me know. So Rex and I hit it off, but he didn't give me a job immediately. But 2, 3, 4 months later, he calls me and says, hey, you want to do Pioneer Baseball? Still want to Pioneer Baseball? Yeah. So next thing I know, I'm working in Stillwater, and then I told you what happened with Steve Buzzard to put me on the mic. And, you know, he introduced me as the voice of the Cowboys. I said, I'm the stadium, and I'm the voice of the Cowboys, because, of course, Dave Hunziker does a great job as the radio voice of the Cowboys. So I always like to make that distinction. Very fortunate that I grew up in a small town that gave me opportunities, and I'm fortunate now that I have a day job and I'm working hard for OSU athletics, which is so passion for helping out my school. But it's good to have fun on game days, so people, you know, treat me really well. So
how much prep work do you do for a football game compared to, like, say, a basketball game?
I tell you, I do a lot of prep work for this. Now, you know what? I don't have to do a ton of prep work because when you're doing public address, the most important thing is get the pronunciations right. So I work really hard on that because I think you lose credibility quicker if you're just saying things wrong. And I even do that with the opposing team. You know, one of our SIDs last night was Sean McGuire with media relations. Then one of the media relations folks from UT Martin. We go through the entire roster, right? We think they're going to play or not. I make little notes on those. So that's the most prep I do. And then I'm blessed. I've got a team that we've been together for a long time. I've got on the far left another war dog, Jason Pogue. He and I played basketball together in high school. And Jason works on campus. He's my numbers guy. So he's the one I was arguing distance with. Joking. He's the guy. So 49-yard punt and a 13-yard return, and I'll regurgitate that. And then I've got Chuck Lester on my left, who's the band announcer that gets so crazy when the band's up there. It's a great job. He was one of the 19-year members of the marching band. He's the announcer. He's still with me. And he has the binoculars, and he's paying attention to who ran the ball, who caught the ball for the opponent, and who made the tackle for the opponent when they're on defense. And then on my right is a buddy I was in college with, Steve Baumhoff. We call him Lefty because, you know, as a kid, he stuck his arm in a combine and lost it. And so he tells everybody to call him Lefty, and he's got more jokes about being one arm than anybody you can imagine. But tell you what, he was the best softball player on our team when we were in college. And he's amazing. Played center field. He was fast. He'd catch that ball, put that glove under here. Ball would come out, and he'd throw you out at third base. I mean, he has never let that hold him back. He can tie his shoes. I mean, he's an amazing person, and we've been tied for a long time. He handles the home team. So he's got the binoculars, and he's telling me, you know, who's in at quarterback and who did this and who did that. So we've got a really good team. Now, I tell people, I noticed that media relations keeps making the font smaller as I get older on the roster card. And then my spotters are getting older. So if I ever mess up and you're at Boone Pickens Stadium, especially because that's where I have spotters, not in basketball, it's really their fault. All right. So they didn't see it right. We have a good time.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
I love the stories because it tells you a little bit about who you are and your experience, and that's kind of what it is, how you put your time and effort in, and you worked hard to get to where you are. That's kind of the whole idea behind it.
And so when talk about college athletics, when I was there going through Oklahoma State, college athletics was what we grew up knowing. You can't pay athletes. I had a picture. I had Jeremy Cook print off a picture. He was at Nationals, wrestling Nationals with us. And it was after Jake Rosholt won. And it was a great picture. He just won the Nationals, pointed to the crowd, had him sign it, took it to the wrestling room, had him sign it. It was a great picture. And he said he wanted it. And at that time, it was pretty frowned upon for me to even give him a picture. But nowadays, you got millions of dollars being spent through NIL and collectives and et cetera. Talk about that landscape now and with your day job of raising funds.
Yeah, crazy enough. Pouring rain, and I could be at Walmart and see what plates I couldn't get. It's the NCAA's fault that we're here, in my opinion, because the rules were too strict. You know, kids couldn't work in the summer at some point. I mean, they're just, you know, and I'm not against student athletes having some money. I think it's a little out of control, and we've called it the Wild West over the last 3 years or so. You know, when this NIL stuff broke, Chad Weiberg and myself and my team, we couldn't even say the letters NIL. It's like we had to just act like we didn't know what was going on. I mean, we're not supposed to talk about it. And then 9 months later, we could talk about it. You could mention it to donors, but I couldn't take a check from them for NIL. A few months later, you can talk about it. You can get the check, but it's got to go to the collective. Okay, at least we're making progress. Now, at least it's internal. Mm-hmm. You know, so now it comes through the OSU Foundation, and our donors like that better. You know, it was a weird setup when you had a collective. We were lucky that we had OSU people that cared about OSU. They weren't trying to benefit from it. They were just trying to keep us competitive. So they were working hard, but our donors were hearing from people they didn't know. And they would call and go, why is so-and-so calling me? Well, here's why, because I can't talk to you about it. And it was just weird. And it's not over yet. It's the most transformational period in college athletics ever. And again, I blame the NCAA for not handling this better. If they would have said, you know what, it is silly. You know, a player can make up to $25,000 a year. You know, if they'd have just done something like that, there'd have been parameters around it. Right now, we don't have parameters. We've got an open transfer portal, so there's no real commitment on the student athlete side, and all the commitments on our side, financially and with scholarships and all that, that's got to get remedied. I hate to say it. I think we're kind of relying on Congress, which is crazy, to think they can get something done, but we need them to help us with collective bargaining. And, you know, maybe set limits on what a student athlete can make. And so we're a long ways from through it. But I will tell you, we have great leadership here with Chad Weiberg because he never gets rattled. And when we're all, not that we haven't all vented and had little therapy sessions about it, I'm not saying that, but Chad has told us more than once, listen, there's always been schools that have an advantage over Oklahoma State, the Blue Bloods, right? He says this, and I think it is so true, that when the dust settles, we're going to do everything we can, and we're going to remain competitive, and Oklahoma State is going to be competitive, and we're going to be fine. And there's still going to be schools that have an advantage over us. And by the way, they're going to be the same damn teams that have always had advantages over us. So that's what we got to keep in mind, and we just have to keep working and keep educating our donors. I'm worried about donor fatigue, but at least now the people we've built relationships with, and I've got a staff that has been here, you know, one of my guys has been here 17, 18 years. The other one, he started a week before me, so we're 21 plus years. We've built a lot of relationships, hopefully a lot of trust with our people. So when we call, they understand where we're coming from. Doesn't mean they're going to say yes to what we're asking, but we at least have a chance. A better chance than somebody cold calling, if that makes sense. It's all about relationships. So we're just going to continue to educate and keep that trust and hope that our people stay with us because it's so important that we remain competitive, especially, oh, we want to be competitive in all sports. We battle for championships around here, and that's what Chad Weiberg's plan is. But we've really got to have a good season here in football, and we got to remain competitive there. It is so important as we continue to evolve in this new era. And then we need to get basketball back competitive because it's the other sport that can bring in revenue, which is so important. We're committed to the $20.5 million, which is the limit this year. And we're doing that because we promised our coaches and our student athletes and our fans and supporters that we're going to remain competitive. So that's what we're doing. But that's a big move that my team and all of us have to, the coaches, everybody has to help come up with that $20.5 million so that we're not having to lay people off. We haven't really done that. When somebody's left, we've looked at a position and said, do we have that? There's been a few times that we said no. But no heads have rolled. Some places have 25, 40 people. But I don't think that we're a athletic department. You know this. We're pretty streamlined. A lot of us do a lot of things here. So we don't have a huge staff. So it'd be hard to cut. What we are doing is cinching up the Chad Weiberg and Reed Simmons, $4.5 million that we've shrunk out of our budget. And we're asking every coach to find 5% in their budget. So we're tightening things up. The concerts were a big help. You know, we made $3 million last year. We announced yesterday that we're doing the Boys from Oklahoma again, a little bit different with the lineup, but some of them are the same. So hopefully that's going to bring in, you know, $2-3 million again, which will help against that number. So we're chipping away at it. And then, obviously, asking people to help us. So it's not over. I think we're handling it the best we can, and we had a good game.
When of that $20.5 million that the NCAA said that for the revenue share, when that number came down into all the athletic departments just nationwide, did you guys have a chance to talk, or did you talk with not only amongst the staff, but from other universities, maybe not in the conference, but just in general, see what they're doing, kind of share ideas. Yeah. Does that happen at all?
Yeah, it does. We have a big it is just about 12 months, but 16 months. So we mentioned this. We went through a real renaissance period. Tell the story that for 40 plus years, we spent $9 million on facility improvements. That's why we had a track that had potholes in it. That's why we had a rusty old stadium that our friends down south called Rust-Oleum. That's why we had the smallest basketball arena in the conference. We used to have elite facilities, and we had let it go. $9 million sounds like a lot, but over 40 years, it's nothing. We got a renaissance period here where we've spent over $700 million on facilities. And I told our 12 brethren, we are very blessed that we went through that renaissance period when we did, and we've updated our facilities. Not that we're done. Coach Lutz and Coach Hoyt will tell you we need another basketball practice facility, and we know we need a wrestling facility because with the RTC and all those guys in that room, there's not enough room. There's pillars that they can run into and get injured. So we know we've got to do that. But we've done almost everything else. We need to do something for Kenny Gaskey so that an indoor hitting facility can continue that. Seats. I don't think we're going to finish stadium. So we're out of Cincinnati and Houston and Arizona State, Arizona, all these places, they got to catch up to us. Mm-hmm. So they're having to not only find the $20.5 million, they're having to build facilities. So we're blessed there. Now, where some of them are blessed that we're not, some of them get up to 50% of their budget from campus. We don't get anything. Mm-hmm. So we are needing, I know Dr. Hess and Regents and everybody on campus are trying to cinch up their belts so they can find a way to help athletics, because athletics is so important. We always have said this. Actually, somehow Boone Pickens quoted me in his book. He said, Larry Sage says that athletics is the front porch of the university. And it's true. When we have success, then enrollment spikes and people want to be a part of a winner, whether it's a Final Four or it's a Fiesta Bowl win. You know, right, wrong, or indifference, the Science Bowl and the Math Bowl are not something that everybody tunes into. But Cowboy football, Cowboy basketball, baseball, wrestling, all that stuff, you can tune into that. And you get it in your blood. And athletics is what keeps us bonded, you know. Where else can you get 50,000 people, 60,000 people together? Or on a homecoming weekend, you have 110,000 here. That's mm-hmm. because of athletics. Yep. Because that's how we keep our pride going. Not that we're not proud of what's happening at College of Engineering, Architecture, and Technology and some of the other schools, arts and science, you know, I came through with journalism and broadcasting. But what really keeps you bonded and what we talk about and what we've been talking about on this podcast is athletics. So it's mm-hmm. important that we stay competitive.
You mentioned the concert, and it was a massive success. That brought in millions of dollars of revenue, not just for the university, but for the community around. I mean, the hotels, the food, all the taxes that were associated, gas, the fuel taxes, all that kind of stuff. How did that process start? Were you involved with it? And how did it kind of come to fruition from just like a pipe dream of getting that getting Cross Canadian Ragweed back together?
We're lucky that we have heading up our facility, senior associate AD named Kyle Waters. It's a Stillwater High grad, OSU grad. Was the groundskeeper Ivy Reynolds for years. And then he went to California. I think he ran Coachella and different big events out there. And so he's got a history of it. He knows how to do it. And he also was here when all those red dirt bands were coming through here all the time. Of course, all the guys that were here had a connection to Stillwater at Oklahoma State. And that made it successful. And but we were worried because we had never proven we could do it. We had done, you know, what we call orange peel. Huh. You know, it was never on this scale where the stadium's full. And the problem is when we renovated, we didn't leave a way to drive a truck out and unload it to get ready for a concert. So that's why people have said you can't do it in Stillwater. Well, this was a big test, and we didn't know we were going to sell out four. We were hoping to sell out one. Then it became, oh my gosh, we might sell out two. And then it just exploded. I hope it happens again. But
I bet it does.
We can do it. And you had to carry all this equipment in. I mean, it was harder work. Took longer, but they got it set up. And it was an extraordinary success. But give Kyle Waters a lot of that credit because he knew how to do it. And he pushed us to do it. Kyle loves doing it. So he's like, in our senior staff, he's like, I'll do a concert a month if you'll let me. And we're all like, nope, 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 nope. And I don't think you'll never see us do four nights in a row again because we almost killed our facilities people. You got to realize they were cleaning up like we'd have had four straight home games, and you had to be ready for a home game the next day. You know, it was crazy. And then we almost killed our police force. I mean, they were exhausted after four straight. Heck, I was exhausted. All I had to do was go shake hands in the suite level and make sure everybody was okay. So it took a lot of effort. So I don't think we'll ever do four in a row. So hopefully what happens here is we sell Saturday night, April 11th, which those tickets go on sale before long. I don't know the exact date. If that goes well, we'll sell out the Friday night before. If that goes well, we'll see them out a different weekend. But we might do four in a row. Now, say that. If Garth finally says, you know what, I'm ready to come home.
Yeah.
We might sell out 10 straight.
I would go to that one. That's the one concert.
We'll have IVs ready daily for the facility staff and the police. But we want Garth to come home sometime. So I say never, but Garth can change your mind. I like our plan now to do a couple on one weekend and go to another.
Listen, you got great companies here. If that's the case, you can always get a hold of Express Personnel, get some temporary help there for you.
Express Personnel, we just lost Bob Funk.
Yeah.
And I love Bob Funk. He has given more money to Oklahoma State than any non-grad ever. So he was a great supporter. And they used to have our in-stadium people. We would hire their people that they would hire to be ushers and keepers in the gate, ticket scanners, all that stuff. So we worked with Bob Funk and Express for a long time. So you're right.
Yeah, just, yeah, get some more Okie people up here working for you in the up at the stadium, and just every night for 10 straight nights, do Garth for 10, then Crust Canadian in the back end, and just one big festival. It's almost like Coachella.
Everybody works two nights, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea. So I hope that happens sometime. But I like our plan now, and I'm excited that the Turnpike Troubadours, which I had never seen them live, those guys are awesome. Cross Canadian, we brought him back from the dead. I mean, Kyle got them back together for this. Now they're touring again together. And I believe that this is going to be a 15-stop deal for the boys from Oklahoma. They just did Waco the other night. It went well. But one night, four. A friend works with me at the LSU Foundation. And they said, well, you know, the system went down. The lines are huge. And they're going, well, we're just not used to this. And she keeps going. We did it four nights in a row in Stillwater, people. Quit complaining, you know. But I think, you know, we breathed some life into Red Dirt Music. It was still popular, but we really notched it up. It was great partnership with them. And man, it was a fun four nights, and I'm looking forward to it again. So what do we got? The Great Divide will be here with those other two bands I just mentioned. Wyatt Flores from Stillwater, Oklahoma. I mean, we're giving a lot of love to Stillwater High School, and he's really taking off. And there was a new band, somebody in the Saints that I had not heard
of. Shane Smith and the Saints.
Shane Smith and the Saints. I listened to about three songs they just did. They're good, too. So it's going to be a good show.
During those shows, do you have any development responsibilities for OSU Athletics?
Well, my team, we sell all the suites. You know, we have 123. Actually, we have 131 suites now that we put the field level suites in last night. I don't know if you noticed those. That's more suites than any school in the country, by the way.
Wow.
So when we did this renovation, we went from zero suites, really, and zero club seats to the most suites in the country and the second most club seats in the country, I think behind maybe A&M, which we have, 3,600 club seats. So that's premium level revenue that we'd never seen before. We bring in about $9.5 million in suites every year, and we bring in somewhere around 7.5, I think, in the club. I may be a little off on those numbers, but that's found money. I always tell the story that when we did the premium seats, you know, that money was new money to us. Well, that's more money than what our, you know what our budget was for the athletic department in 1988 when Barry ran for the Heisman? Take a guess, fellas. What was our overall athletic budget?
$2 million.
How many?
$2 million.
Well, that's a little low. I'm giving you a hint. 10 is exactly it. Our overall budget for all sports was $10 million. And now we're bringing in, you know, $17, $18 million just in premium seating. And our budget last year was a little over $120 million. So we've come a long way, you know, and it's become big business. My job is, as we sell the suites, So we go around, make sure all of our suite holders are happy, and just get a chance to visit with them. It's a way to connect with them, see how life's treating them, and just make sure they're all right. So, you know, that's not a rough job. I mean, I love my job because I get to have fun on game days, like I told you. But then the rest of the time, I'm going out and building relationships with people that love the same university I love. And I'm trying to inspire them and build trust to where they help us out. So I've got the best of both worlds.
That's pretty cool. You've been around Oklahoma State, what, since the 80s, late 80s, 89. Right?
89.
If you were to think about Oklahoma State athletics, who would be your Mount Rushmore over all sports?
That's a tough question because I've got so many that I would put up there. But
I'll give you two more faces on that Mount Rushmore. So that would be
I'll get two more.
Six.
Still going to be hard, but you got Mr. You got to have John Smith. I believe he had his own troubles. Although he was never identified as any wrongdoing on his part, he was still in charge. So we said to him, he said, you got to remember, wrestling was on probation, football was on probation, and basketball had not really been very competitive very often since Mr. Allen retired in 1970. So he came when we needed him. And this place exploded. We sold out immediately. He brought pride back here. We were immediately pride nationally. And it was just a magical time. So I bet that he said he was a really good player with him. Would have been a great three-point shooter if they'd had the three-point line. And just one of the all-time great coaches. Man, this is hard because you realize every year we do the Hall of Honor. And what we put in the system, the media relations Gavin puts in, is if you won a national championship, if you set a record, if you were part of a Big 12 champion, you know, all these things that we put in, and about 2,300 names come up, and we have to whittle it down to six or seven every year. A lot of places don't have that problem, that you have that much greatness on your campus. You weren't all Americans and other things. So help me think here so I don't leave anybody out.
I got one.
Yeah.
Ed Gallagher.
I think you got to put Ed Gallagher up there. So you got two wrestling coaches, but he's known as the father of wrestling. Exactly. So we're already at four. And by the way, what have I put up? I put up four coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John Smith is perhaps the greatest amateur wrestler of all time, but he would tell you he wasn't, but he, you know, he's right up there. So I might have to think about putting Robin Venturi up there. I mean, what a player. You got to put Barry Sanders up there. And it's hard to argue that you don't put Thurman up there. I'm running over, even though you've given me a bonus too on OSU's Mount Rushmore, you know, and I'm sure I'm leaving some people out.
The greatest thing about OSU is you're right. We have I don't want to say a problem, a really good problem in the fact that there's been so many good coaches, athletes, et cetera, that were phenomenal in their field. You're looking at wrestling, and it's better than any other sport in the nation. Any other
Doesn't matter what level. I'll tell you a quick story. One time, John Smith asked me to MC the wrestling banquet after we'd won our fourth straight, right? And I get up. I think I'm nailing this thing. I go, ladies and gentlemen, you are talking about the New York Yankees of wrestling. And the crowd goes crazy. They love that. A little later, John Smith, he wasn't being rude, but I introduced him. He came up and he goes, Larry, I'm going to correct you. The New York Yankees wish they had as many championships as the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Yep.
And that's the truth.
It is.
We had 34, and they only had at the time, I think, 26 world titles. So I went, yes, sir, because you don't argue with a wrestler, right? I'm not arguing with John Smith anyway, but he had a good point, and I've never said that since, but I've told that story a lot. But anyway, I interrupted your question.
Yeah. It's amazing how many, and even from the golf side, you look at the golf side, there's a ton there too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ricky Fowler has been the greatest walking billboard we've ever had.
Yeah.
He wears that orange on Sundays, and he loves Oklahoma State. and he is so popular out there. I'm hoping he gets back to winning. He played really well toward the end of the year. Barely missed the final cut for the FedEx championship. So he's turning the corner a little bit. I think family has veered him off, maybe concentrating on golf as much. Plus, all these guys in golf change their swings. I mean, Victor Hovland wins the FedEx championship, changes his swing. So he's been up and down for the last couple of years. Ricky Fowler had the most unique swing. He's battling for championship. He finishes second at, I believe, three of the majors. Never has won one. And he changes his swing. And it takes him 3 years to get it back, you know. But these guys are always, Ryan Cameron, who's in media relations, is always talking about they're always looking for an edge. And I'm like, they're looking for an edge when they're at almost the top of the game, but they can't help it. I mean, they're always trying to find the key.
And the facilities you have. I mean, you mentioned the basketball rink. You mentioned the football field. You didn't even mention Carston Creek, which is one of the preeminent golf courses for a college in the country. It is. And then you just rip it apart because it's good. But like you mentioned the golfers, it's not good enough. So let's just redo it and do it all over again.
Listen, it's part of Coach Holder's continuing crusade to torture as many people as he can, because he has now made it the hardest golf course in the world because he loves to torture people. Listen, I worked for him for 16 years. I still have PTSD, all right? I mean, he just likes to give you hell. I remember Matt Grantham, and I got $1.5 million gift from a guy I'd never given. We walked in and tell Coach Holder, hey, we got $1.5 million from so-and-so. Man, I wish you'd have gotten it for this. And I said, Coach, would you get up and celebrate for? I had to make him celebrate and high five Matt and myself, because he's always like, well, I wish you'd have done this, or we should have done this, instead of celebrating the moments. I'm about celebrating. Life's about the moments. Coach doesn't think that way. And he does love to torture people, I'm telling you. So he wants to have the hardest course. What worries me is, what's that going to do to the psyche? I know some players will take to that and that will make them better, but some, their psyche will suffer because they're playing the hardest course in the world, or at least the country, every day.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. But you're right. Carston is unbelievable. One thing about it, when we finally started doing facilities around here, and Coach Holder gets some credit for this, and Boone, if we're going to do something, we're going to do it right. And we have done that when we have built anything. Like the Griner family cross-country course is the best in the country. Carston Creek is the best in the country. I believe this basketball facility is as good as any in the country. That football stadium out there, we just got named the best football venue in the country. So we've got, it's not the biggest, but people love it. They love the experience. I mean, our equestrian facilities have come a long way. I mean, our tennis facility, by the way, is the best in the country, thanks to the Greenwoods. Our baseball facility, there's no facility better than that in the country. I'm not just bragging. These are top echelon facilities in all these sports. When we finally did it, we've done it the right way. And I'm thankful for that.
And now, like you said earlier, you can concentrate on NIL stuff and you don't have to also concentrate on facilities.
Well, I've got to still get the wrestling facility done. So there's a little bit.
That's true.
But at least it's not what these other schools are having to try to do to renovate football, to renovate basketball. We don't have an indoor practice. We don't have an indoor track, I should say. We're the only school in the conference. So sometime that needs to happen. But I just think there's going to be a little bit of a moratorium on building for a lot of schools, not just us, because you have to focus on, we need people to give to the Cowboy Excellence Fund through the Posse, because that's where we're going to take the revenue share out. That's going to help us pay the bills. So that's where our number one priority is people give to the Excellence Fund.
Awesome. We do this question about 30 minutes in, but we've had such a good discussion that it's an hour in. So which is great. I love it. That's why I was so stoked.
I'm all in. I get fired up.
I love it. I love the stories. It's great. It's good memories. I was probably there in a lot of the stories and memories that you have as well. And so, but the podcast is called When Hard Work Beats Talent. So the way we came up with that is my wife and I were sitting talking about, you know, a name of a podcast, and we wanted to Wes and I were thinking about doing it around leadership, about business, doing something. We knew we didn't want to do it about insurance. Insurance is boring. We're both in insurance and it's just awful to talk about. However, so you always see in athletics that you always say if that guy worked hard or that gal worked hard as much as they're talented, then it'd be crazy how good they'd be. What is your story over all of your years of with OSU athletics and beyond that of a memory that that guy may not have been the most talented, but the work ethic that that individual put in, and it could be a lady as well. Well, what's that story for you?
War pigs, one of those offensive linemen, just good old boys. I'm friends with them. They just work their tail off and they do everything they could to get in front of somebody. So Barry could spend one of his trophy. And I love about Barry is he always shines a light on those guys. You know, when I asked him to be the parade marshal, he said, I'll do it if the war pigs can be there too. That's pretty cool. And I think there's been so many that it's hard for me to just dial one up. Who's yours? Maybe that'll spur something for me when you think about it.
Mine would probably be more into the wrestling just because that's,
sure, that's where you were.
Where I was.
Guys that worked their tail off in wrestling.
I mean, and the crazy thing about when I was there, that was when they were really, really good. I mean, they were winning national titles. They won those four straight. I was there for the first two and the one prior to when we went to Albany. The best thing about that room was those guys were mean. They were absolutely asshats on the mat. Great outside the mat. But when they got on the mat, they would work hard. They were just brutally mean. But when you going on 3-on-3 and doing your groups of threes, I mean, those matches I saw between Chris Pendleton, Tyrone Lewis, and Jake Rorschach were just amazing.
What do they say? Sharpens iron.
Yeah.
That's great about now because David Tenner's as close as we could get to John Smith. And
yeah.
He's still wrestling on the mat. All of his coaches are wrestling on the mat with their guys and sharpening their iron.
When we were going through that, you had John still wrestling. You had Mark Branch there. You had Eric Guerrero. You had Daniel Cormier. You had Pat
Kenny
Smith.
Mundy? Was Kenny Mundy still there?
Not when I was there. Okay. He came shortly after. Yeah, he came shortly after. So you had 10 national titles, Olympians, all still competing in wrestling. Mark Cody told me this one day. He said, the moment you graduate and you're done wrestling, you're automatically 10 points better. Because you're not worrying about cutting weight. And so those guys, Pat and Mark and John, they could just really help out and teach them, and they won four straight. That's why I'm excited about this year with David. And last year he came in, they did awesome. I think it's the same. They're going to continue getting better and better. But to answer your question, I think some of those, who would I say would just – I mean, there's so many in the wrestling side.
Just one of those guys.
Mark Branch has to be.
I mean, he's an incredible story. Blew out his knee, still won national championships. I mean, and then he's gone on to be a great coach.
Yeah. Mark Branch is one to where, I mean, he had the talent, but he had to work hard. I think Josh Holliday.
He's longer than most wrestlers, too, which is not always an advantage.
Mm-mm. I think Josh Holliday, actually. He had to work really hard at baseball.
He's not the size of his brother.
No.
And so I'll tell you a quick story on Holliday. I was calling the Stillwater Pioneer games a couple years in after Rexall hired me. And Josh Holliday is a ninth grader playing for the high school. And it was either his ninth grade or sophomore year. But he took so much batting practice that he had a stress fracture in his forearm and had to sit out. That's work ethic. That is wanting to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I used to, Josh is one of the all-time people that I've known. He, I mean, I to my wife and my daughter, Lauren, was born. But man, I hope my daughter could find somebody to have a child, because that's how much it impressed me when he was on the LSU team and I was filling in and doing some games with Rex that year. So Josh is a great story. That's a really good one. And there's a bunch of wrestlers, and he did spur on. I knew he would when he got talking. I think Mid-Country, Bryant Reeves, he's playing. He's only got six guys on his team in GANs. He's a little puffy, if you know what I mean. He's not in great shape. And they're only able to practice 3-on-3. But we give him a chance in that first week of practice. Mr. Ibe is there. And, you know, we got Corey Williams and Darren Alexander and Sean Sutton, all the Cornell Hatcher. They're going up and down the court, and Country's coming this way. They're going back this way. And Country ends up tripping over the half-court line. And Mr. Ibe, Coach Sutton, used to say, turn to him and goes, that boy's got a long way to go. That was kind of by Sam Elliott slash Mr. Abbott. But then 2 weeks later, he's starting. He came so far and worked so hard to get in shape. He's starting in the preseason NIT in New York. So he would be one of those stories, became what a 2- or 3-time All-American. I mean, what a player, what soft hands, became a first-round draft pick and made millions of dollars, injured his back. And he's a great story. And the other one would be Keaton Page. Mm-hmm. Because Keaton Page wanted it worse than everybody else. He was that gym rat I was talking about with my radiologist. He's who I always compared my radiologist to. He and Phil Forte both. Mm-hmm. Those guys were gym rats. They worked hard enough. Even though they were short little dudes, they found a way to play Division I basketball. Hell, I think Keaton scored 41 in Texas or Kansas, one of them, for a big win. And Phil Forte was such a great shooter, and they had to work harder than everybody else. So it's really when work meets talent. I mean, when you work hard enough, you can get the talent, and that's what those kind of guys did, and they've always inspired me to do what I wanted to do. And maybe I didn't work hard enough, or maybe I was too dang slow, but I always looked up to those guys, even though with Phil Forte and with Keaton Page, I'm looking them right in the eye. Mm-hmm. To them because they worked harder than everybody else, and they got to fulfill that.
Mm-hmm. You know, John Smith always said during our wrestling banquets, he always said that not everybody can start at wrestling. You only get 10 weights. You only get one guy starting. Yeah. But those backups that are driving him and helping him, makers. Those guys are difference makers. Yeah. And you need those.
John Smith's another one that worked. He tells a story when he was battling for world championships. He would get up at midnight or 2 because he knew his opponent was over on the other side of the globe working out, and he didn't want him to gain on him. So he'd work out one in the day and one at night, which is a little psychotic, but that's how he did it. And he had talent, but he worked harder than everybody, and that's why he won more world titles than anybody until what Burroughs.
Gary Ward.
Yeah.
Gary Ward always said, and I'll always remember this, going to baseball camps, you know, we'd have hitting camp underneath Gallagher Iba during the OSU Kansas basketball game once. It was quite an experience listening to the crowd cheer, but you're trying to hear Gary Ward, which wasn't hard because you know Gary, he was a yeller. And he could have a booming voice. But he always says something that resonated with me, and I still take it, no matter if it's in the athletics or in businesses. Somewhere, someone is practicing, and when you meet him in head-to-head competition, he'll beat you.
Yeah. That's what John was saying. We're getting up. We have to work out. So his competition wasn't getting it.
Exactly. And so it's quite amazing what he was doing and what – not only the wrestlers, but, I mean, you look at Kevin Ward. He wrestled in the same weight class as Johnny Hendricks. I once asked Pat Smith Kevin Ward's back. I once asked Pat Smith about his Olympic stuff, and he said he tried, but the problem is Kenny Mundy was in front of him. So, I mean, it's wild to think about athletics and people working hard, and whether it's in the wrestling room, football, basketball.
You really learn lessons. You know, Jerry Winchester just named the practice field. We just didn't know that. Would you go to that?
Mm-hmm.
He said something as we were having the ceremony. He said, the reason I wanted to name these fields is I learned everything I know, everything I put toward business and my success in business, I learned on the practice field. Now, in the games were easy because back in the day, you know, his coaches were 3-a-day practices.
Mm-hmm. So
that's when I bonded with my guys. That's, you know, that's what forged us together. And head coach Gandy's going to have a good speak to the team because players today need to realize that where you really get better, where you really learn, where you really bond is on that practice field or on that court.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
It's supposed to be all the hard work you put in, and the reward is supposed to be the game. You bleed, you sweat, and you just give all you have in those daily practices so that you prepare your body for the exhilaration of what running through the tunnel or running onto the mat and getting ready to compete, because you put all that hard work in. You know you're ready, and you put yourself in those situations. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
We're so blessed. It's so blessed to walk in work for my alma mater is just special. And just love the LSU family. I know you do too, Ryan. We're going to Wes and get him in here. And it's just a really special place. And
it is.
I always tell people, it's good to be us. Even when we lose a ball game, okay, it's good to be us. I said one time, I don't care if we lose 100 straight football games to OU, I wouldn't switch sides. This is our side. This is our team. This is our family. So love this place and just feel blessed. It's been a lot of fun today, guys. Yeah, I got long-winded on some stuff. Wound up about this place.
Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate your time, making the time for us. We know you're a busy man. So thank you.
You bet, guys. Thanks so much. Enjoyed it. And I'm going to make sure my wife listens to the first 5 minutes anyway. I'm going to get some points.
You definitely could.
I'm just going to pat myself on the back. A pretty good answer there.
Yeah, well, don't worry.
I'm one lucky guy with my job, and I'm one really lucky guy with my bride. Yeah, we've got a great family, so life is good. You know, so enjoy it. It's about the relationships. It's about the moments, like something we've talked about today. And just really enjoyed it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. You can find this podcast wherever you get your podcast, and be on the lookout for the next one. And until next time, have a great day.